It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
There are two different things you can do. You can revoke the authorization of the company to take that money out of your account. So that's something that you do say to the company. You rescind your that company's authorization to take the money out of your account. Once you have ended your authorization, then if they continue to debit your account, it becomes unauthorized and the unauthorized payment rules apply. In addition, you have the right to go to your bank and do a stop payment order to block the charge from coming through. So that's something you do with your bank, and it stops your account from being debited.
Attorney Lauren Saunders at the National Consumer Law Center talks about consumers' rights to challenge unauthorized payments and to stop recurring payments. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is taking action against an online lender for deceiving borrowers. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 281, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Last month, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB, took action against an online lender, Integrity Advance, for deceiving consumers about the cost of short-term loans. The Bureau alleges that the company's contracts did not disclose the costs consumers would pay under the default terms of the contracts. The Bureau also alleges that the company unfairly used remotely created checks to debit consumers' bank accounts even after the consumers revoked authorization for automatic withdrawals. The CFPB filed an administrative lawsuit seeking redress for harmed consumers, as well as a civil money penalty and injunctive relief. Integrity Advance was a Delaware-based online lender which originated and serviced short-term loans to consumers around the country. From May 2008 to December 2012, Integrity Advance offered loans ranging from $100 to $1,000, and consumers typically applied for the loans by entering their personal information into a lead generator website. Under Integrity Advance's contracts, the loan would roll over four times, causing additional charges to accrue with each rollover, before the company applied any payment to the principal. However, the costs on the disclosures were based on the assumption that the loans would not roll over and would be repaid in full by the first payment. Integrity Advance never informed consumers of the total costs of the loans if those loans were rolled over, even though the contracts were set up to roll over automatically. This meant consumers would end up paying finance charges more than double the amount originally borrowed, $765 in finance charges for a typical $300 loan. The CFPB alleges that Integrity Advance violated the Truth in Lending Act, the Electronic Fund Transfer Act, and the prohibition against unfair and deceptive acts and practices in the Dodd-Frank Act. The unlawful practices include hiding the total cost of loans, requiring repayment by pre-authorized electronic funds transfers, and continuing to debit borrowers' accounts after consumers canceled the authorization. Integrity Advance's contracts include a provision allowing the company to use remotely created checks if a consumer successfully canceled his or her authorization for withdrawals. The provision was hidden in the loan agreement, and the company used it to take consumers' funds when consumers believed they did not owe money to Integrity Advance. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. The news about data breaches and scams has left people wondering about unauthorized charges taken out of their bank account. Attorney Lauren Saunders at the National Consumer Law Center gave a presentation about consumers' rights to challenge unauthorized payments and to stop recurring payments. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here are her remarks.
So the first question often people ask is, well, you know, how did they get into my account? And there are a lot of different ways in which scammers can get a hold of your bank account information. Certainly, there have been a lot of data breaches in the news lately of all sorts. These are just a few. My own family has been subject, I think, to 5 different data breaches. And these data breaches can get your information in different ways. Certainly, one way is to actually get a hold of your credit card number or your bank account number and use it directly. Some data breaches involve other kinds of personal information that doesn't involve your account number, but if they get enough personal information about you, if they get a username and a password that you've used on other accounts, they could then potentially log into your bank account or your credit card and get at you that way. And sometimes when they get personal information about you, that can also be used to open up an entirely new account in your name. ATM skimmers are another way. These place special devices on an ATM, and they are able to extract your bank account information and your debit card information that way. We see email and phone phishing scams. You might get an email that says they need to confirm information about you. They need you to confirm your social security number. You may get a phone call from a company that claims that already has some information about you. So it sounds like somebody that's actually a company you've been dealing with. Never click on a link in one of these emails. Never reply with personal information. Never give personal information over the phone to somebody who has cold called you. Find out what company is. Independently get the correct phone number and contact them yourself so you know you're talking to the right company. Lead gen are websites. There are all sorts of websites that are offering all sorts of help. In my world, we work a lot with payday loans and websites that are aimed at people who are looking for payday loans. And these websites are often not actually a lender. They are designed to get your personal information and sometimes pass it on to a legitimate lender, but sometimes sell that information to who knows whom. And we've seen a lot of problems with phantom payday loans, people who fill out forms like this on the web and they provide their bank account number thinking they're going to get a payday loan, and before they know, their information has been sold to a scammer. There are also, of course, a lot of telemarketing scams and phone scams, asking people to pay right away, to pay the IRS, to pay a debt they owe. There are scams that claim that somebody's grandchild is in prison and needs money right away. Sometimes these scams use things like Western Union or prepaid reload packs, but sometimes telemarketing scams also manage to convince people to turn over their bank account information or their credit card information. Online shopping is another area that can pose problems. Sometimes companies that are offering what look like 30-day free trials, in fact, have fine print that you're authorizing recurrent payments that you actually didn't realize you were offering, or sometimes additional clubs or memberships entirely different from what you thought that you were buying or signing up for. And then, of course, we've got, just the plain vanilla. You lost your card. A restaurant server copied down the information. And, of course, those are also ways that we can have unauthorized charges. A word about chip cards have been in the news lately. You've probably been getting new cards at home that have that little square chip embedded in them. That's intended to help with some of these problems. The cards generate a unique number so that the store doesn't actually get your original card number. They get a one-time use code. And so even if that code is stolen, it can't be used again. So they can be safer, certainly, than a traditional credit card or debit card. But a couple of problems people should be aware of. When you put that card into the machine, don't get distracted and look at your mobile phone and walk away and leave it there. Some people do forget their cards. And because this kind of fraud is going to be more difficult to perpetrate, we are seeing fraudsters move to other areas of online card fraud. So it doesn't mean certainly an end to fraud. So what are your rights if you find that there's an unauthorized charge taking out your bank account? And I'm going to start with bank accounts. And I'm going to start with a situation where your card was lost or stolen. The rights are slightly different whether your card was stolen or not. So if your debit card was stolen or lost, you have the best protection if you report it within 2 business days of noticing that it was lost. And that 2 business days starts when you realize that you lost the card. If you do that, under federal law, your maximum liability for any authorized charges is $50. However, even that $50 will probably be covered by card network zero liability rules. Visa, MasterCard, the other card networks usually won't even charge you that $50 unless it happened at an ATM or you used your PIN. The belief there, I think, is that if you wrote your PIN down or you gave the PIN to somebody, maybe it wasn't unauthorized. So if you report it within 2 business days of noticing it, you are probably going to be completely protected. If you don't report it quite that quickly, still report it, of course, as soon as you can. And even then, if the unauthorized charges happen in the first 2 days, your losses are still capped at $50. If there are other charges that could have been prevented if you had reported it on time, you can be charged, held liable for up to $500 in unauthorized charges up to the first 60 days from your statement, and possibly even more if there are even further charges after 60 days that could have been prevented. Now, if your debit card was not lost or stolen, but you get your bank account statement and you find that there are unauthorized charges on it, there's a slightly different scheme. As long as you report it within 60 days of when the statement was sent, you are not liable for any unauthorized charges on your bank account. So that's pretty strong protection, and people should feel good about that. But, of course, it's important to review your statements regularly and check for those charges. If you don't notice something until after 60 days, some of these unauthorized charges can be small. Some of the ones that fraudsters get away with are the $5 or $10 charges that they put on your account every month, hoping people won't notice. So you might notice it today, and then you realize it goes back, you know, several months. So even if you don't report something within 60 days, you still have some protection. You're still not responsible for any charges that were in those first 60 days. The bank can hold you responsible for charges that happen after that if they could have been prevented if you had reported it on time. And this is report to your bank. So we're talking about if it's a bank account, you know, you call your bank. If it's a prepaid card, you call, you know, the number on the card or the number on your statement. Once you do that, once you make a report of unauthorized charges to your bank, that triggers certain duties on the bank's part to investigate. The bank is supposed to take up to 10 days to investigate it and to correct the problem if there is one. And if the bank can't complete the investigation in 10 days, then the bank needs to give you a temporary recredit to your account of the unauthorized charge, and then the bank can take up to 45 days. And if I forgot to put this in here, but if it was a purchase made in person at a store, for example, they can take up to 90 days. After the bank completes its investigation, it must report its findings to the consumer and its conclusion about whether the charge, in fact, was authorized or unauthorized. Under federal law, the burden is on the bank to show that the charge was authorized. And even if the consumer was negligent, that's not relevant to whether you are protected from unauthorized charges. So although we certainly urge people not to write your PIN number on your debit card, if you did that and lost it, you would still be protected. But please don't do it. If the bank concludes that the charge was authorized after its investigation, then it can re-debit the charge from your account. However, it can't bounce any other payments that would have come out of your account that wouldn't have bounced without that re-debit for 5 business days. In other words, if they've given you a temporary credit, but then they reverse it, you've got about 5 days to get, you know, your finances in order and make sure that you're not going to be bouncing any further items out of your account. So now I'm going to talk about prepaid cards. The rules for prepaid cards are very similar. They're just slightly different. The laws I've been talking about, Regulation E, only covers right now a couple of kinds of prepaid cards. They cover payroll cards, which are cards offered through employers as a way of paying wages, and they cover non-needs-tested government benefit cards, like the Direct Express card that is used to pay Social Security payments. The CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, is in the middle of a rulemaking to extend protections to all prepaid cards, and we're expecting those final rules to be out next year. But in the meantime, even prepaid cards that are not technically covered under these laws almost always voluntarily follow the rules now. So I think you can generally expect that what I'm about to discuss pretty much covers all prepaid cards today. Okay, so now we're done talking about unauthorized charges, and we're going to talk about recurring charges that you do authorize. Many people will authorize regularly recurring debits against their bank account to pay, for example, their electric bill, their rent or their mortgage, credit card payment, a gym, magazine subscription, some sort of internet subscription. People also authorize debits against their account to pay online payday installment loans and various other payments. One thing that's clear is that you have to authorize recurring debits taken out of your account, and the authorization has to be clear and readily understandable. And if it's not, then it's an unauthorized payment, and the protections that we previously talked about for unauthorized payments apply. There are a couple special rules, or one special rule, if you use an automatic repayment method to repay credit. Under federal law, a lender cannot require you to repay a loan with recurring electronic payments from your account. They can give you an incentive. They can discount the interest rate or offer you another cost-related incentive to sign up for automatic electronic repayment, but they can't require it. The other thing I'd like to point out is that, especially in the payday loan area, we sometimes see illegal, unlicensed payday loans on the internet. And if the contract is illegal, if the entire contract is void, then any authorization in that contract is also going to be void. And many state laws actually specifically make it illegal to collect those payments. So if there is no legal authorization, then the same rules that we talked about for unauthorized charges would apply. And this is also true for payday loans that purport to be offered by a company affiliated with a Native American tribe. There are some technical issues about whether you can sue those companies, but they still have to comply with state law when they operate off reservation and comply with the authorization requirements for making loans and for getting authorization to take money out of people's bank accounts. Now, I'm going to talk about two distinct but related rights. If you have set up recurring payments from your bank account and you want to stop them, There are two different things you can do. You can revoke the authorization of the company to take that money out of your account. So that's something that you do say to the company. You rescind your that company's authorization to take the money out of your account. Once you have ended your authorization, then if they continue to debit your account, it becomes unauthorized and the unauthorized payment rules apply. In addition, you have the right to go to your bank and do a stop payment order to block the charge from coming through. So that's something you do with your bank, and it stops your account from being debited. Now, whether you do either of these things, if you revoke the authorization for electronic repayment or if you put in a stop payment order, none of that changes whether you still owe the money or whether you have violated the contract. You still may have problems with the company. This simply governs whether the company is able to get the money out of your bank account or not. So focusing first on the right to revoke the payee's authorization to make recurring charges. Just yesterday, I had no idea this was coming out so timely, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau issued a bulletin to inform consumers of their rights here. And the CFPB said that a consumer may decide, after authorizing a merchant or lender to make withdrawals from their account, that they want to revoke authorization. And the CFPB provided some sample revocation letters on their website, and also sample letters that you can send to your bank to inform your bank that you have revoked the company's authorization to take money out of your account. For ACH payments, an ACH payment is a technical term for what we think of as just an electronic payment. If you gave somebody, a company, your bank account number and the routing number, and they're taking money out of your account that way, that's an ACH payment. And there are special rules that apply there. And the authorization form itself has to give you the right to revoke authorization and tell you how to revoke authorization. Now, there are not any specific rules for how much notice that you have to give to a company to revoke authorization. Certainly, you have to give them a reasonable amount of time in order to stop the next debit. Sometimes you will see contracts that say that you have to give them 2 months' notice. In my opinion, that sort of long notice requirement would not be permissible. And we'll see in the next slide that you can certainly stop it at the bank end. But there is nothing specific in federal law about how much notice you have to give. Now, in addition, it's, you know, always best to go first to the company that is doing the debit and simply, you know, ask it to stop. Do that first. Keep a copy of any letter that you write. But if you don't trust that they are going to comply, especially if they claim to want a long notice period, you have the right to direct your bank to stop payment of recurring electronic payments. And here we've got more specifics in federal law. The bank is required to stop recurring payments if you give notice, and notice can be orally or in writing, as long as you do it 3 business days before the payment is scheduled to be debited from your account. So again, that initial notice can be a phone call. It doesn't have to be in writing. However, when you call up the bank and tell them that you want to stop payment, the bank can require you to confirm in writing that you want, in fact, to stop the payments, and the bank can ask for a copy of the letter that you've sent to the payee revoking any authorization, and the bank can require you to provide that information within 14 days. But for the first 14 days, even before you put anything in writing, the bank has to comply with the stop payment order. After 14 days, if they've asked for written confirmation and you haven't provided it, then they can lift the stop payment order and the payments may come through. If you've done it correctly, however, once the stop payment order is issued, the bank must stop all future payments for that particular authorization. So they can't require you to submit a new stop payment order every month if you scheduled monthly payments. One order should stop it all. The bank also can't tell you that you just have to deal with the company and that's not their problem. And the bank cannot tell you, that they can't do it unless the payee stops debiting. I hear that all the time, unfortunately, but it's simply not true. The bank has responsibility to comply with the stop payment order. Banks do typically charge stop payment fees, you know, in the range of, $30, $35. There's nothing specifically in federal law about, you know, whether those fees are permissible or too high, but they must comply with that order.
You have been listening to Lauren Saunders at the National Consumer Law Center giving a presentation about consumers' rights to challenge unauthorized payments and to stop recurring payments. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Human trafficking for sexual servitude is the fastest growing criminal industry in the world because it is immensely profitable. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Charlottesville attorney Corbin Addison discusses efforts to shut down this crime by heavily penalizing the purchase of sexual services in the first part of a two-part series. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegner.